Golden State Media Concepts Technology Podcast covers everything tech. The hottest mobile phones, tablets, games. We review it, rate it, test it. Whether you're Microsoft or Apple, Android or iPhone, we'll give it to you
again.
Black and white. The Golden State Media Concepts Technology Podcast.
Welcome to Golden State Media Concepts Technology Podcast. I'm your host, Jonathan Charney.
And I'm your co-host, Shay Northrup.
And today we're going to be talking about Google Play's Family Store, no more porn at Starbucks, Minecraft AI, feds and email overseas, and if we can, we're going to get to the state of Utah and drones. And first thing we're going to start off, we're going to be talking about Google's Family Store. Now, one of the major problems that a lot of these place, these stores have, whether you're talking about the Apple Store or the Google Store, you name it, is you just have one account and that's it. Now, this is the – actually, I'm surprised this didn't come out sooner, honestly. So what it is Google took steps last year so you can play media with family members, so you could play music and videos. This is pretty much a family shared account where a family manager controls access to the apps people buy. So, you know, say mom and dad, they're the managers, and little Susie and little Billy, you know, want to sign up the account. And so you have access to the apps, and it doesn't particularly say a whole lot. Now, I'm wondering if this allows you to do, say, allowance. You know, say if you want, like, say, $5 a month goes onto the account. What can they do? Does this limit their access to free stuff, too?
Yeah, that's something that I'm kind of interested in knowing is, do they have access to use your credit card to buy stuff? Because that could end really badly.
Because all the articles I've read, they've basically said stuff like, let's see. But it seems that Google is going to let users share movies, TV shows, books, apps, and as well. And so I just don't know. This is actually a great idea. Now, my assumption would be is, especially say for kids, is this going to be it's either like content that's been curated or it's content that, say, mom and dad can control, for example, like
hopefully.
Yeah, true. You're hoping that they'll say, okay, they don't have access to this, this, and this. Because let's be honest, unlike Apple's App Store, there's some sketchy stuff on.
There's definitely some sketchy stuff on Google Play. And one of the things that I'm kind of worried about, too, is a lot of times kids know a little bit more about technology than their parents.
Sometimes.
Most of the time, unless if it's people like us.
My favorite thing is I've worked in retails in past, and you hear the parents say, "Oh, I'll have my 13-year-old nephew set it up." It's like, but you don't know how to work it. No, that's why I've got nephews. It's like, this is going to end well since he obviously knows more about the technology than you do,
right?
But I guess that's just a generational thing. But this
definitely.
I see. I'm looking forward to it. Now, Gizmodo, for example, is a website, and then they were saying that it's live. Now, I don't have an Android phone, but everybody I know who has kids who has Android has not – this feature hasn't popped up for them.
Right. Well, and I have an Android phone, and I have an Android tablet. So this stuff really doesn't affect me that much. I don't really have a family to share Android stuff with, and if my family did want to share – I wouldn't share with them. So this really doesn't affect me as much as it would affect other people.
Now, why wouldn't you share with them? You wouldn't want them to share your apps or what's your reasoning? I'm curious.
We kind of handled those kinds of things on our own. My parents don't know anything about phones and Android, and they just own a home phone. And then, like, my brother would probably have some really weird, like, Japanese anime stuff all over it.
So what about if, say, you know, when you have kids, is this something you would do, or do you want it the same way? You know, like a friend of mine, for example, has a daughter, and he set up an account, and it's for his daughter does a tablet, and it's on his account, but, you know, all the family settings are pretty much right. All the way turned up. You know, can't do this, this, and this. But so is this something you would do if you had kids?
If I had kids, I really feel like if I were to put on parental settings that they'd be able to figure out how to disable them. Like, I've looked through how to turn on parental settings on my tablet and on my phone, and it's too easy to turn them off. I might as well just leave it off, honestly. And if they find things that, you know, are a little unsavory, then
So you're going for the, what do they call it, talking about the forbidden fruit than just ignoring it type of thing.
Yeah.
I, you know, that's not a bad way to go about it. I am really curious to see how well this works. I know Microsoft's Xbox Live, for example, for a while had, what did they call it, the allowance feature.
Yes.
And see, I'm totally for that. I don't know why kids want their allowance, say, on the Play Store, for example. I don't completely understand that. But but I think it's a great feature. I think that Apple had that too, I think. I think that's a great feature to be able to, instead of your kid having access to it, you can say, okay, he can do $20.
Yeah, that's something that is actually good to note. If there's an allowance thing, then I'm all for this, because we've all heard those stories of little Jimmy playing Clash of Clans and spending over $1,000.
See, I think that's actually the app maker's issue. And I also do think it's Google shares some of the blame, is they make it too easy to buy stuff. Like, for example, I've purchased Pokemon balls on Pokemon Go just so I could actually see how easy the transaction is. And it's insanely simple. Now,
It's literally like two clicks of a button. It's like,
now, question. When you buy an Android, do you have to confirm the purchase, or do you just, because on Apple, you hit it, you do your thumbprint or enter your password, and then a purchase it. Does this do the same thing?
For Android, what happens is you make the purchase, and then it'll say, do you want to make the purchase using a card of this, of whatever the number, the last four digits of the
1, 2, 3, 4, 5 type of thing.
Right. And then you just click OK and it's done.
But there's no password attached to it?
Nope.
Whoa.
It'll ask you if, like, so what it'll do is it'll confirm that you want to make the purchase. There's no password. And there's even an option where it says, do you want to just make purchases in the next 30 minutes without us notifying you? And I'm like, hell no.
Wow. Okay, Google, you need to get better on that. Just you know, from a guy I could see at some point having children, I can totally see me getting very upset with you and possibly throwing a tablet across the wall.
What is cool, though, and one of the things that I do enjoy about it, though, is that all of my purchases stay with me and with my Google account, because before that wasn't a thing. Before it was just whatever purchases you made, it was on your Android, on your tablet, and that's it.
Really? Because I know Apple has done that for quite a while. They call it purchase history.
Yes.
Or even, you know, there's some apps that I've downloaded just trying, or say I've been invited on friend shows and I'm testing out apps and I'm like, why do I – this is embarrassing. I don't want anybody to see this on there, you know?
And that was a thing that didn't happen for a while, but now it's a thing. So I moved over. You remember I was talking about in a previous episode that game Sandbox?
Yeah.
And I bought all the extra nitroglycerin and all that other explosive stuff that they give you, like fireworks and uranium and stuff like that. And so it was like $1 to purchase all that extra stuff on the game, and I purchased it. And so now I can play it on whatever. Whenever I download that app, I can play it.
So pretty much on some things, they were catching up to Apple. That actually makes me feel better. And we're going to switch. This is not really a hard switch. This is kind of a similar thing. No more porn at Starbucks. Now, this is nothing particularly new. McDonald's and other companies that have been doing free Wi-Fi have been doing it for a while.
Yes.
A lot of the major problems, for example, is, especially with this stuff, because it's, they're definitely doing, say, when you type in porn in the search bar, they're probably doing ad keywords and certain websites. But the major problem with this stuff in the past is, say, difference between looking up a bikini and Bikini Atoll being the most famous example of it.
Yeah.
So none of this stuff is perfect, but one of the reasons, I'll be honest, I applaud this is, believe it or not, you're kind of breaking a social contract by doing something like this in a restaurant. And if you don't know what I'm talking about, take a look. Watch what people do. A social contract is pretty much something that everybody agrees on, but nobody really talks about.
Yes.
And that's
what our government is completely founded on.
And I'm completely for this. You know, if I don't want, you know, my kids, somebody else's kids, seeing somebody watching something questionable, no matter what it is, I don't even really care if it's, you know, if you're watching Saw at McDonald's for some reason, I don't really want kids to see that. Because honestly, why does a kid want to see Saw? At least, you know, wait till you're older.
On the flip side, though, one of the things we have to consider is the steps that are coming closer and closer to ending net neutrality. About a year or two ago, there was a really big issue on whether or not the government should be able to censor and use the internet, and whether or not internet companies should be allowed to slow down bandwidth and stuff like that based on what you're watching.
Oh, no, totally. I agree with you. That should never happen.
One of the things that kind of scares me about places like this, and there was that thing in New York where they set up, instead of payphones in New York, they have internet kiosks, and they made it to where there was a big controversy about whether or not homeless people should be allowed to watch porn on it and whether or not you should be able to see porn on there. And they interviewed a homeless man, and he's like, yeah, man, I can go see porn on these internet kiosks. It's great. But it's one of those things that kind of worries a lot of people. It's like, where does it end with our censorship of the internet? It's one of those really scary, slippery slope situations.
Now, we're definitely going to have to visit this conversation again, but it's a double-edged sword. Where does the line go?
Exactly.
I'm not generally a guy who says, you know, let's go on the for safety, you know, reasons, you know, think of the children type of thing, even though I actually think that's an important conversation to have. I
feel like private businesses should be allowed to censor their free Wi-Fi. I mean, they don't have to give you Wi-Fi. I was just pulling devil's advocate.
Oh, no. I actually completely agree with you. For as far as the government goes, I think everything should be agnostic of everything. I think you should let, you know, users or buyer beware. I think companies should be able to censor. If ISPs want to do it, I think it should be something that I, as the purchaser, have the right to turn on or off. You know, say I have kids and I don't want my kids ever finding that, hit a switch, and then boom, I'm paying for a more censored version of the internet. I actually think that should be something on my end that I opt in to.
And it's one of those things, too, where kids are going to find it no matter what.
Oh, yeah. Kids are always, when it comes to technology, as my co-host and I were talking about before the show, is they're always the smartest people in the room when it comes to technology. And
people can argue that because of the internet, it's made much easier access to pornography and stuff like that. But back in the day, people bought magazines.
Yeah, no, it's always been out there. It just the method of viewing it is different.
It's changed.
Yeah.
So don't think for a second that technology is this big evil thing that makes your kids horrible people, because
yeah, it comes.
They'll get it no matter what.
Oh yeah, no, totally. You know, it comes down to a couple of things in my opinion. And granted, I don't really have a lot of experience in this, but I think it comes down to the parenting and the kid. You know, not sure. Our kids into that. But I think the parent needs to have a conversation and needs to say, hey, if you do this, your ass is getting in trouble.
Sure.
You know, so what do you guys think? Is this something that you're for or not for? You know, we talked about the Google Family Store and no more porn at Starbucks. Do me a favor, go to our Facebook page. This is Golden State Media Concepts Technology Podcast. This is episode 15. I want you to find this episode, and I want you to comment about this, and I want you to do segment one. That's what this is. That's what this is, and I want to know exactly what you think about this. And after we come back from the break, we're going to be talking about everybody's favorite game, Minecraft.
Tired of searching the vast jungle of podcasts? Now listen close and hear this out. There's a podcast network that covers just about everything that you've been searching.
Hey!
The Golden State Media Concepts Podcast Network is here. Nothing less than a podcast bliss with endless hours of podcast coverage. From news, sports, music, fashion, cooking, entertainment, fantasy, football, and so much more. So stop lurking around and go straight out to the Golden State Media Concepts Podcast Network. Guaranteed to fill that podcast itch. Whatever it may be, visit us at www.gsmcpodcast.com. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter, and download us on iTunes, SoundCloud, and Google Play.
So recently we talked about an AI that Microsoft created, and Microsoft is at it again. So Microsoft has created an AI to play Minecraft, and what they're hoping to do with this is they're hoping that the bot will learn, and they're planning on seeing where the
So I think we should go back just a tad bit more and explain what Minecraft is.
Yes. So Minecraft, the best way to explain it is it's Legos for the computer. You have all kinds of blocks that you can use to build your little world. You can build your homes. You can go mining for, you know, coal and iron and diamond and all of that. And at night, zombies and monsters come out to fight you. So you have to either hide or go out and fight them. And chances are if you go out and fight them, you're going to die. So a big part of the game, there's farming, there's mining, there's building, and there's a lot that you can do. You can find your way to sustain your life by several different methods. And one of the things that they're hoping to figure out by using an AI is to see how an AI learns and how artificial intelligence will handle the situations in Minecraft. And it's pretty cool because they're actually releasing it to the public and you can actually get a hold of it. The project is called Project Malmo. And
that's M-A-L-M-O.
And so they're releasing it to the public and letting people kind of play with it and mess with it. And they're trying to see.
Now, do you think this thing's going to somehow end up becoming like that Twitter bot, you know, some sort of sex bot Nazi? Or I'm being a little extreme, just to be honest. But Microsoft's past history of bots hasn't been the best.
Well, and it's interesting because they're like the only company that actually seems to care about artificial intelligence, at least artificial intelligence reacting with the public. They're letting us play with artificial intelligence, and I kind of like that.
And it's not, you know, we've talked about how both of us are a little bit kind of leery about AI, but this is AI that, at least on some level, is useful and fun. So I'm totally okay with it as long as it's not, you know, like hell.
And I've talked to a few people about it, and they're all really interested because I have a group of friends, and we like to play Minecraft, and it's fun when you play together. And so it'd be fun to play with a machine, but then one of those things is we all kind of think that it's going to become a murder machine. Like, it's going to realize that if I kill these creatures, I can sustain myself, and if I kill, you know, like, I feel like it's going to build an empire. It's going to kill everything, and yeah.
So is the bot affected by the same standards you are, as far as having to eat or whatever you do in the game?
Yes, it is set up to where they're just dropping it in the world and seeing what it does, and it gets to learn. And that's one of the great things about it is we actually get to see this bot learn.
So it's basically a user.
Exactly. And it can learn, like, I'm kind of curious to see is whether it's going to go the farming route, which is a really beneficial way to sustain yourself, is set up a farm, grow things, capture animals, and breed them, or if it's just going to become a murdering maniac that just kills everything.
Talk about being thrown on the game grid. I'm really excited to see how this works out. Now, I've never played Minecraft or not, honestly, not like my co-host here. I've played on a couple of different platforms, but yeah, nothing to the level of entertainment.
I've played Minecraft when it first came out. When it first came out, my buddy got it on the PC, and I watched him play it, and I was like, eh. And then a couple years later, I bought it myself.
So this thing is basically set out to solve problems in the game like you do. So what exactly would it be? I know you talked about it. Like, what is it exactly supposed to do? Just planning, learning,
building. It's one of those things where we get to see, like, okay, so we get to see how quick the AI is going to learn how to do these things. We get to see what it chooses to do once it figures out how the whole system works. And honestly, I feel like with how fast Tay learned, I really feel like this thing could learn how to, like, just beat the game. Because there is a way to beat the game. You go to, like, the Netherworlds or whatever and go and kill some dragon, and that's, like, the end of the game, end game.
Now, question, and is this, like, a Microsoft server? Is this, like, anybody's own server? You know, because I'm thinking the more users there are, the faster it learns. If this is just, like, a personal server, the slower it's going to learn. Do you know anything far as on that end?
So Microsoft has made a platform for artificial intelligence research using a modified version of Minecraft that will become available to the public for following a limited release to select researchers. So it sounds like what they're doing is they're going to release it and people get to play with it, select researchers, and they're just going to drop these AIs in Minecraft.
So this is basically going to the wild. So I could have my own Minecraft server with this AI.
Potentially. If you can, you know, be like, hey, Minecraft. So, hey, Microsoft, I would love to test this out. If you're listening to this podcast, hit us up on Facebook or Twitter, and we will play with it.
That's Golden State Media Concepts Technology Podcast. And you can find us on Facebook, Twitter, and a bunch of other stuff.
Yes. And we monitor the Twitter page pretty regularly, so please comment or, you know, let us play with Minecraft.
See, I'm thinking eventually, if this goes off the way they think it is, I could totally see this becoming like a DLC.
Yeah, this is exciting. In my opinion, I think that this is great. I love the fact that Microsoft is playing with AIs, and it's, you know, as my favorite software company, I love that they're, you know, kind of sort of releasing this out and seeing where it goes, and I feel like it could pave the way to a better future.
Of course, on the other hand, I wanted them to release, was it Tay into the Wild? That would be fun.
Hashtag free Tay.
Yes. Hey, totally. I'm down with it.
I agree. And yeah, bring Tay back.
At least, see, what I'm for is they should release it in the wild, release it as a kit, and just let everybody go for it. See what happens.
So release your Minecraft AI
and Tay.
And release Tay in Minecraft. I would love to see what Tay would do. Probably light the whole world on fire.
But it would be entertaining. What was it? Some people just want to watch the world burn.
Yeah, she'd probably kill all the villagers and
wow,
burn all the horses.
They got to call the Minecraft AI Tay after what happened with her.
That would be great.
So, jeez.
Release the Jew-hating Hitler bot on Minecraft.
You heard of Microsoft, please. So now we're coming up to a break, and when we come back from the break, we're going to be talking about your files being stored overseas digitally and the federal government.
Want to find out what movies to go see? Then check out the GSMC Movie Podcast. It's your ticket to the latest movies, whether it's a new blockbuster event, romantic, comedy, or action flick. This show has got it all covered. They talk some what to go see now. Don't bother. What's hot on Netflix and everything in between? That's gsmcpodcast.com/movie-podcast. When it's all about the movies, it has to be this new show. Don't forget to like them on Facebook and follow them on Twitter. Visit gsmcpodcast.com for more info.
And we're back. Now, one of the things that's really interesting, also coming up from our favorite software company, Microsoft, the courts say that the feds cannot seize emails if they are stored overseas. So what happened was there was a 3-judge panel of the 2nd U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals, and they anonymously overturned a lower court's concept for finding against Microsoft for not handing over consumers' emails stored in Ireland.
Is that really a shock? And I see that to me, the fact that's even questioned is kind of weird because it's on foreign soil. Granted, it's the internet. The internet's worldwide, but you're
and
crossing.
Microsoft has servers in a bunch of different countries.
Yeah. So to me, it just seems like that's even a weird thing that you have to even say that. I mean, granted, it's an American company, but the fact that you have to have a ruling saying, oh, you can't cross into – there's no common sense.
Well, I think it's important that – I think it's very important that the courts have said this is a thing because we would not want Ireland or Britain or anyone for that matter seizing our emails from our borders. So it's really good that we have defined that they can't hack into other people's. Now –
well, see, I think it's even weirder than that, far as basically the ruling was saying that you if you have stuff stored in Ireland and the United States government wants access to it, they pretty much have carte blanche to do so.
Right.
You're violating another country's not only rights, but you're violating their citizens if their citizens has emails, even remotely attached to whatever they're looking for.
Exactly. Ask nicely, U.S. government. Ask nicely.
Yeah. I just don't see that working. Now, if I remember correctly, doesn't this have to do with like some sort of law that was passed back in the 80s?
No, what law is that?
Was I think because it was the Stored Communication Act of 1986. That's it.
Yes. It has a little bit to do with that.
I don't know. This whole thing is just odd to me. The fact this conversation has to exist. Now, maybe it's because the internet has brought the world together, you know, where there's no real boundaries on the internet except there's, you know, maybe between, you know, the dark net, Reddit, and a couple
other
places.
There's definitely no boundaries on the YouTube comments.
Oh, dear God. Yes, there's no common sense and censorship either.
And that's a beautiful thing.
I don't know. I mean, I'm happy for this ruling, but the fact this even brought up, it's like, what else are they doing that needs some sort of approval, that needs lawful guidance that the United States government can't overstep their bounds?
Well, and it's interesting because companies like Microsoft and Apple have been like fighting the feds about whether or not they can tap into their technology all the time. Like, remember the thing with Apple where they were not releasing phone records and stuff like that over to the feds and...
That's right. And
the U.S. government was kind of mad.
I wonder if this goes back to the reason why allegedly the next version of iOS is supposed to be even more secure, like even harder for the Apple themselves to release the information.
Yeah, it's great. I think it's great that a little tiny company – or I shouldn't say tiny companies. I think it's great that these big companies like Microsoft and Apple are willing to be on our side.
See, I completely agree. My only issue – is I'm wondering if this is going to bite them in the butt at some point. Now, granted, I'm totally for my information should be encrypted. If I don't want anybody to get to it, they shouldn't. Mm-hmm. But at what point, and this, by the way, this is kind of put on your tinfoil hat time, is what point is Big Brother going to knock on your door and go, you either go to jail or give us all your information, which, by the way, they've done to journalists. And I'm using journalists in the broad sense, far as they've done this to vloggers and bloggers who had information but refused to surrender it, and literally they were sent to jail until they surrendered their tapes because they're not journalists in somebody's eyes. So at what point is this going to bite us in the butt when, you know, they say you're going to give us your information or they're going to tack on like 30 years type of thing?
Well, and then here's another scenario. So say the government couldn't get a hold of some emails because they were over in Ireland or England or wherever, and their internet, their email base is out there, and because of it, they couldn't prevent a atrocity that, you know, could have been prevented if they were able to get a hold of those emails. It's one of those double-edged swords, the NSA double-edged sword. Should they be looking into your information, and could they prevent things by seeing into your information?
Yeah, no, totally. It really is a double-edged sword, and I've always kind of gone on the side of the consumer because, well,
exactly.
I'm a consumer. I'm not a business, but I'm always for protecting my rights and everybody else's rights. I mean, believe it or not, we have a constitutional right to privacy, even though everybody and their favorite Congress cutter might disagree with that.
For sure.
But I'm totally for, like, I love the idea of, like, they say Apple's Messenger, for example, is encrypted. They say there's no way to get to the middle of that. Whether I actually believe that or not is separate from the fact they say that, because it wouldn't technically be hard to do.
And more and more software, like even like Word documents, you can get encrypted now. It's great. More and more things are becoming encryptable.
And encryption, believe it or not, is not a bad thing. Now, it is for the U.S. government, for example, when they like... When they want to intercept, say, some sort of terrorist group's communication.
It's also bad for hackers.
Yes. Now, pretty much, it's like the better the encryption, the harder it is the U.S. government. I remember something, a U.S. government saying that they're having a hard time cracking even consumer-based encryption. Now, imagine how hard, like, federal government encryption is.
Oh, boy.
You know, because a lot of places are what, 128, 250, 256-bit encryption? You imagine something that's maybe higher than that?
A gigabyte of encryption.
It would be ridiculous. Now, the other question is, excuse me, is it the other way around? You know, say some U.S. general has something encrypted and it turns out to be a bad thing. He goes to, like, I don't know, for some reason, say federal court. Can the federal court actually order him to unencrypt it? And will he be fined or penalized like we would be?
We could really get into this, and it is super relevant, but I don't want to get into politics right now.
No, I'm totally down with that. This next story has a little bit to do with politics, actually more to do with lawmakers, but Utah lawmakers vote to disable and crash drones near wildfires. Now, this is nothing new, really. The last couple of fire seasons, at least here in California, yours here on the local news, some knucklehead decides to look at the fire and launches drone up in the air, and these giant bombers that are actually trying to, you know, laying down fire suppressant have to veer off course or turn around. We don't have a lot of time for this, but I'm totally for this. Generally, I wouldn't be for anybody telling me what I can and can't do, but this is a public safety thing.
So you're saying that people have been flying drones around where the wildfires are?
Yeah, yeah. So
that's not okay.
So up near me, where I live, there was something called the Trailhead Fire, I believe, and even a couple other ones. I think it was the King Fire and all that. And if you didn't know, we're in California, where this is being recorded, and people literally would fly their drones and watch the flames. And while I actually think that's kind of cool, but yeah, they're literally in the way of the people trying to fight the fire.
It's really interesting because as a filmmaker, I have a friend who he shot his science fiction film after the fires happened last year. Him and his crew went out and shot some stuff in the remains of where the fires had been. Like, they just snuck in and shot some stuff.
A guerrilla filmmaking at its finest.
Yeah, it's super sketchy, but they did it.
Now
the footage looks good.
Now here's the thing I'm thinking. I don't know what the penalties of this should be, but according to the bill, it'll be a Class B misdemeanor, could be fined up to $2,500. If the drone causes a firefighter aircraft to be diverted from its course, the offense is bumped up to a Class A misdemeanor, which comes with a $5,000 fine. If the drone hits an aircraft, the drone pilot would be charged a third-degree felony and could be fined $10,000.
I think that's all fair.
It goes more and more. And I don't like the fact that people get fined for this, but I have to agree. If you cause the fire to get worse and somebody loses their home or, God forbid, their life, a felony is the least you deserve.
Honestly, if someone loses their life, I think you should be facing a murder trial, but
No. See, I'm totally down with that. I just see the problem. I think drones are the new technology, and anytime you get like new technology, people push the limits. They did it, for example, with Google Glass.
Yeah,
and people are having the conversation. Okay, Google Glass shouldn't be worn in the bathroom. Is that really an issue? And this to me is an actual important conversation to have. It's just like people flying their drone in an actual flight zone in an airport.
Yeah,
What even makes you think flying over an airport or, God forbid, a military base is even remotely appropriate?
It's definitely not appropriate. Don't do that, guys.
Please.
GSMC, Technology Podcast, does not promote people flying drones over military bases, wildfires, or airports.
It may save you getting arrested. Please listen to my co-host. And we are definitely coming to an end of this episode of the podcast. And we talked about Google Play Store, no more porn at Starbucks, Minecraft AI, feds and email overseas, and a couple of more items. You can catch all of this if you go to gsmcpodcast.com, where you can subscribe to our podcast. In my opinion, the best one on this network. You can catch us on iTunes and anywhere on the interweb. I also want you to go to Facebook, type in GSMC Technology Podcast in Facebook. This is episode 15. I want you to comment on any or everything the stories we've talked about today. Are we wrong? Are we right? What do you think? We want to know. This helps us to become better for you. Now, this is Jonathan Charney.
And I'm Shane Northrup.
And as always, thank you for listening.